We are 91.9 FM, WUMB-FM Boston, WBPR Worcester, WFPB-FM Falmouth, 1170 AM, WFPB-AM Orleans, 91.7 FM, WNEF Newburyport, Amesbury, and broadcasting live on the web at WUMB.org. Hi, it's Marilyn Ray Beyer. Welcome to the special Thanksgiving broadcast of Alice's Restaurant. Now, we do this every year, but recently I had a chance to sit down and talk with Arlo Guthrie in the green room at Club Passine. We talked about the origins and the legacy, too, of the song story of Alice's Restaurant. So we'll bring you that conversation now, followed by Alice's Restaurant in its entirety.
What happened was that we were sitting around in this church that my friends Ray and Alice Brock had been living in for a few years, and we were having a big Thanksgiving after my first semester at a college out in Montana. I came back, and we had always just sat around this table in the kitchen, and we were making up songs and goofing off. We're singing the old Lead Belly tunes or the Cisco Houston songs that all of us really loved, and probably about four or five, six people at most. I mean, it was nothing like the movie version where there were hordes of, you know, hippies sort of running around. And I remember right before Thanksgiving, we decided we had to clean out the church. We're going to have a nice big party and invite all these people. And just like in the song, we took the garbage to the dump, and it was closed, and we found another sort of unofficial dump and put it there. And the next morning, we were surprised to get a call from the local chief of police, Officer Bill Obenhein. And so he called about it and wanted to know what the story was. And we sat around that night, I think, just making up songs. And I created this funny little thing that had nothing to do with Alice's Restaurant, I mean, or the fact that she was thinking about opening a restaurant. But, you know, the verses to the song were just to the tune of the chorus. Shortly after that, I decided that I wasn't going to go back to college. And in those days, if you were out of school and you were over 18 and you were a guy, you were pretty much going to Vietnam. And so I had to go down to New York, where I had grown up, and visit the draft board down there, and went to a place called Fort Hamilton in Brooklyn, and met with all the guys there. And this all happened over the course of about a year. And so all of these different component parts of the song took about a year to put together. And eventually it sort of formed itself into this song. So there was no intent to do anything at first aside from just laugh at the situation as it was developing about the garbage. And when the crime came up as a result of sort of the draft looking into my criminal history, it just made sense to add that part of it. And so that's how it was created, from about Thanksgiving of 65 all the way through the summer of 66. It developed until it finally became a playable piece.
This is Folk Radio WUMB. I'm Marilyn Ray Beyer, and you're listening to an interview with Arlo Guthrie. We'll play Alice's Restaurant following the interview.
My dad had created this sort of, well, not created really, but popularized this version of songs that were really stories told to music. And a lot of people assumed that Alice's Restaurant, really the sort of monologue on the top of a recurring theme, was really due to that. But frankly, it had more to do with a guy named Lord Buckley, who I absolutely adored. He would tell these stories. And other people that sort of took off from Lord Buckley were like Bill Cosby and people who were stand-up comedians, or I mean, there were very few of them who sort of followed Buckley's tradition, but I was definitely an enthusiast, and I was a fan, although I'd never met the guy. He did with words what jazz musicians were doing with notes. He invented words and phrases and strung them together in ways that were not only funny but at times important. He would take the Gettysburg Address and turn it into some sort of hipster version, you know. And he would take some of the old biblical stories and or the story of Gandhi and a whole lot of these other stories that were pieces in and of themselves. So Alice's Restaurant really owes, I think, the style more to Lord Buckley than anybody else. And there were parts of it that were, I think, funny and parts of it that were politically pointed. And over the years, of course, it's changed. I mean, when it first came out, it was really a comment on the idiocy of the times, you know, and how could a kid that was arrested for littering not be eligible to go to Vietnam? And, you know, and it just was, I mean, it would be as stupid today as it was then. And I'm sure that kind of stuff goes on today because I get letters from people with their own individual stories of their Alice's Restaurant, what happened to them. And that still continues. But over the years, it stopped sort of being important in that respect. And it has become a Thanksgiving anthem. But there's no real reason for that, except that it took place during a Thanksgiving. And over the years, radio stations around the country have been playing the tune, and it's sort of become the White Christmas of Thanksgiving. And I don't know how that happened, but I had no intention of it ever even being popular. In the days that Alice's Restaurant was written and when I was performing it, songs on the radio were limited to 2.5 minutes. I mean, if it was 2:31, they wouldn't play it. So there was no way I expected to get an 18-minute and 20-second monologue on the radio. But 2 years after the record initially came out, they made a movie based on it that starred not only me, but a lot of the other people that were actually involved. So the cop in the movie is the same guy that really arrested us. That's Officer Obi right there. And the blind judge in the movie is the real blind judge. I mean, all the other people were in there too, sometimes as extras. They had to bring in some professional people to, you know, have the film carry itself. And over the years, I don't think the movie has held up as well as the song, because the song sort of rings true, because it was true. And the movie had to create, well, you take 20 minutes of song and you have to build an hour and a half worth of movie. So they had to create relationships, and they had to create some kind of drama, and they had to sort of create a statement on the times, quite apart from whatever was in the song Alice's Restaurant. And the funniest thing to me is that looking back at the film now, it was really a film about how the idealism of young people and their sort of quest to be free and to have some kind of meaning would eventually fall into the ego and to the sort of the lost dreams of age. And it's symbolized in this one moment in this big party at the end of the film. And there's a preacher up there and unfurls this big banner and says, we're going to do this and we're going to do that and we're going to reconsecrate this church and we're going to live like we ought to and we ought to, something like that, you know. And the funniest thing to me is that of all of the symbols that Arthur Penn could have used to focus on the lost dreams or whatever, that was the one that ended up being completely false. Because, of course, years later, we did buy the church and we did reconsecrate it, and it is a spiritual center, and it is the place where people's hopes and dreams are kept alive, and not just for any particular friends, but for people everywhere of all persuasions. And it's become even bigger than the dreams that were in the movie version. So I think it's worked out pretty good in the long run.
I'm Marilyn Ray Beyer on Folk Radio WUMB. Alice's Restaurant has truly become a Thanksgiving tradition. A special thank you to Club Passim, Arlo Guthrie, and to our listeners for joining us in our Thanksgiving broadcast of Alice's Restaurant. Thank you.
might have heard this before. I know I have. 'Cause this song is called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant was never the name of a restaurant. That was always just the name of this song. And I guess that, well, that's probably why I still call this song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. I wasn't gonna sing the song tonight, or this decade, but I realized sometime earlier this year that it had been 26 years since this come out as a movie, and it was 2 years before that it came out as a record. And it was 2 years ago on the record, which means it was like 30 Thanksgivings ago. 30 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I decided to go up and visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice didn't used to live in a restaurant. She used to live in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray and Facha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they used to have a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. Seeing as how they took out all of the pews and having all that room, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, found the place was filled with garbage, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the town dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction and headed on toward the town dump. We got there, and there was a sign, a chain across the road, and the sign said, "Closed on Thanksgiving." We had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And so with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset, looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one till we come to a side road. And off of the side of the side road, there was a 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff, there was another pile of garbage. We decided that one big pile would be better than two little ones. And rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat. Went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning, when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage. Just wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obie. I cannot tell a lie. I put that envelope under that garbage." It was after speaking to Obie for about 45 minutes on the telephone that we finally arrived at the truth of the matter. And Obie said we had to go down and pick up the garbage, and we also had to go down and talk to him at the police officer station. Now, friends, there was only one of two things that Obie could have done at the police officer station. And the first thing was he could have given us a medal for being so brave and honest on the telephone, which wasn't very likely. Hey, we didn't expect it. The other possibility was that he could have bawled us out and told us never to be seen driving garbage around the vicinity again, which is what we expected. But when we got to the police officer station, there was a third possibility that we hadn't counted on. And we was both immediately arrested, handcuffed. And I said, "Obie, I don't think I can pick up the garbage with them handcuffs on." He said, "Shut up, kid. Get in the back of the patrol car." And we sat in the back of the patrol car and drove to the, quote, scene of the crime, unquote. Friends, I want to tell you about the town of Stockbridge, Massachusetts, where this was happening. They got three stop signs, two police officers, and one police car. But when we got to the scene of the crime, there was 5 police officers and 3 police cars, being the biggest crime of the last 50 years, and everybody wanted to get in the newspaper story about it, and they was using up all kinds of cop equipment they had hanging around the police officer station. They was taking plaster, tire track, footprints, dog smelling prints. They took 27 8x10 color glossy pictures with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. They took pictures of the approach, the getaway, the northwest corner and the southwest corner, and that's not to mention the aerial photography. And it was after the ordeal, we went back to the jail. Obi said he was going to put us in a cell. He said, kid, I'm going to put you in a cell. Give me your wallet and your belt. And I said, Obi, I can understand you wanting my wallet, so I don't have any money to spend in a cell, but what do you want my belt for? And he said, kid, we don't want any hangings. And I said, Obi, did you think I was going to hang myself for littering? Obi said he was making sure, and friends, Obi was, cause he took out the toilet seat so I couldn't hit myself over the head and drown. Took out the toilet paper so I couldn't bend the bars, roll the toilet paper out the window, slide down the roll, have an escape and get away. Obi was making sure, all right. And it was about 4 or 5 hours later that Alice, remember Alice? This is still the song about Alice. And anyway, Alice come by, and with a few nasty words to Obi on the side, she bailed us out of jail. We went back to the church, had another Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat. Went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning, when we all had to go to court. We walked in, sat down. Obi come in with the 27 8x10 color glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. And he sat down. A man come in. He said, all rise. And we stood up, and Obi stood up with the 27 8x10 color glossy pictures, and the judge walked in with a CNI dog. Sat down. We sat down. Obi looked at the CNI dog, and then at the 27 8x10 color glossy pictures, and looked at the CNI dog, and Obi began to cry, because Obi come to the realization that this was a typical case of American blind justice, and there was no way the judge was going to look at the 27 8x10. Well, it didn't matter, because we was fined $25 each, and we had to pick up the garbage in the snow. But that's not really what I come to talk about so much. I just thought I'd mention it, because I know there's probably some people sitting here tonight thinking this is some kind of nostalgic ballad or something, and I hope so. You never know, they still got that building down in New York City on Whitehall Street, and others like it all around America, and that's where you used to have to go get injected, inspected, detected, infected, neglected, and selected. And I remember I had to go in there one morning a long time ago for a physical examination, so I got good and drunk the night before, cause I wanted to feel my best when I went in that morning. I mean, I wanted to feel, I wanted to look, I wanted to be like the all-American kid. And when I went in that morning, I was hung down, I was brung down, I was hung up. I was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly-looking things. I walked in, I sat down. Give me a piece of paper, said kid. See the psychiatrist, room 604. I went up there. I said, shrink, I want to kill. I mean, I want to kill. I want to see blood and gore and guts and veins in my teeth. Eat dead bird bodies. I mean, kill. 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 And I started jumping up and down, yelling, kill. Kill. And he started jumping up and down with me. And we was both jumping up and down, yelling, kill. 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 till the sergeant come over, pinned a medal on me, sent me down the hall, said, "You're our boy." I didn't feel real good about it, but I proceeded on down the hall, getting more injections, inspections, and all kinds of stuff that they was doing to me at the thing there. I was there for 2, 3, 4, 5 hours. I was there for a long time, going through all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things. They was inspecting, injecting every single part of me, and they was leaving no parts untouched. But I proceeded through until I finally come to see the very last man. I walked up. I said, "What do you want to see me about?" He said, "Kid, we only have one more question. Have you ever been arrested?" And I told him the story of Alice's Restaurant Massacre with five-part harmony, full orchestration, all kinds of the phenomenon. He stopped me right there. He said, "Kid, did you go to court?" And I told him the story of the 27 8x10 color glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and the paragraph on the back of each one. He stopped me again. He said, "Kid, I want you to go over, sit down on that bench that says Group W." "Now, kid." I went over there. Group W. Group W is where they used to put you if you may not have been moral enough to join the army after committing your special crime. And there was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly looking people on the bench. There was mother rapers and father stabbers. Father rapers. I mean, there was father rapers sitting there on the bench next to me. I mean, they was mean, nasty, ugly, horrible, crime-fighting guys. And the meanest, ugliest, nastiest one, the meanest father raper of them all, was coming over to me, and he sat down next to me and said, "Kid, what'd you get?" I said, "I didn't get nothing. I had to pay $25 and pick up the garbage." He said, "Kid, what was you arrested for?" I said, "Littering." And they all moved away from me on the bench there until I said, "And creating a nuisance." And then they all come back and shook my hand. And we had a great time on the bench talking about crime, mother stabbing, father raping. We were smoking cigarettes and all kinds of stuff, having a good time. Till the sergeant come over, had some paper in his hand. He held it up. He went like this. He said, "Kids, this piece of paper's got 37 words for 11 sentences. One, no time to crime. He tell crime. Ain't got a thing to say. Pretend tune about the crime. The resting officer's name kind of thing got to say." And he talked for 45 minutes, but nobody understood a word he said. But we had fun filling out the forms and playing with the pencils on the bench. And I wrote down the massacre like I was supposed to. And I put down my pencil, turned over the piece of paper. There on the other side of that piece of paper, in the middle of the other side, underlined and capitalized, away from everything else on the other side, read the following words: "Kid, have you rehabilitated yourself?" I went over to the sergeant. I said, "Sergeant, you got a lot of damn gall to ask me if I've rehabilitated myself. I mean, I'm sitting here on the Group W bench. On the Group W bench, because you want to know if I'm moral enough to join the army, burn women, kids, houses, children, villages, after being a litter bug." He said, "Kid, we don't like your kind. We're going to send your fingerprints off to Washington. And friends, somewhere in Washington, enshrined in a little folder, is a study in black and white of my fingerprints. They're still there. The only reason I'm singing you the song tonight is because you may know somebody in a similar situation sometime. Even some of you could be in a situation like that sometime sooner than you're sitting here thinking about right now. And if you ever find yourself in a situation like that and you don't know what to do, there may be only one thing that Well, there may not actually be a hell of a lot you can do at all, but there's something you can try, and that's to be wherever it is you're supposed to be. You just go down there, you sit there, you ask to see the shrink, you go up there, you say like, oh, shrink, excuse me, man, but you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant, and walk out. Imagine one person, I mean, even today, walking in singing some Alice's restaurant, walking out. They're gonna say, hey, that guy's 30 years too late. Get that guy out of here. Imagine two of them walking in hand, singing in harmony. I don't care what the president says. Unfortunately, to a lot of people, that's still a problem. Imagine three of them. They might think of some kind of organization or something. And so you can imagine like 50 people, maybe 50 people a day walking in, singing some Alice's restaurant, walking out. Friends, they might think it's a movement. And most of them be too young to know what a movement was. That's what it was. It was the Alice's Restaurant Anti-Massacre Movement. That's what it was, and that's what it is. And I guess that's what it's always gonna be. And all you've got to do to join is to sing it with me as it comes around again on the guitar. With feeling. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. No, no. You can't start singing loud just at the end if I quit singing. You would have thought after all this time, you'd have learned by now. If you want to end war and stuff, you've got to learn to sing loud all the time so people can hear you. Now, I know this is a long song. Believe me, I know how long it is. And even on the record, when it come out, it was pretty long. What, 18 minutes, like I said, or something? And I'm not sitting here trying to make it any longer, but I can feel it. I know there's people sitting in this very room tonight that don't believe that songs can change the world, or that songs can change the destiny of nations. I don't blame you. I wouldn't have thought so myself. Of course, I know something that some of you may not know, but I was reminded of it during the last election. See, I remembered back when Jimmy Carter was elected president, because I got an invitation to his inauguration. And I knew I had to go, because I knew it'd be the only one I ever got. Been right so far. But I went down to Washington, D.C. I'm not making this up now. This is real. I went down to Washington, and it's just like you see on TV, people partying and stuff. And everything was fine until along toward evening. Somebody come around, tapped me on the shoulder, and I turned around. And it was Chip Carter, the president's son. I said, hi, Chip. I recognized him. He was about my age. He said, Arlo, I've been looking everywhere for you. I said, Chip, how come? He said, Arlo, I've got something very important to tell you. And I said, Chip, what is it? He said, Arlo, we were moving our stuff into the White House, and in the Nixon Record Library, we found a copy of your record, Alice's Restaurant. I looked at Chip Carter. I looked deep into the man's soul. I said, Chip, was it open? And in slow motion, he nodded, yes, it had been opened. And I want you folks sitting here tonight to know that I did not think about that for a long time. Until just recently, when we was all thinking about Richard Nixon when he passed away. And I see some young people here that may not know. See, but Richard Nixon was the president of the United States. And he used to like to tape stuff. I mean, if you can imagine a world before VCRs and cassette decks was everywhere, you can imagine a man who was truly ahead of his time. And he taped everything that went on in the White House, and everything was fine until one day they started playing back the tapes. People found out what was going on in there. But it wasn't anything that was on any tape that got the man in trouble. so much as it was what he had erased from the tapes. And there was one particular famous gap in one of those tapes that I was thinking about one night when I said to myself, Arlone, how many things in the world are 18 minutes and 20 seconds long? Well, how many things in the world are exactly 18 minutes and 20 seconds long? Probably just a coincidence. But it's good enough for me. So when the song comes around again on the guitar, remember that songs can change the destiny of nations, even if it's only by coincidence. You just have to know the words, have the feeling, and wait for it to come around again on the guitar. You can't get anything you want at Alice's Express except in L.A. So you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Da 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 da. At Alice's
This is Folk Radio, WUMB.
I've been making plans for a season filled with cheer. I've got my round trip ticket, and I can't wait to make it home this year. Colored lights are shining, the snow sparkles like the eyes of the children lying in shop windows. Hello, my old hometown. I've been away for too long. Stockings hung in fireplaces, all hearts are filling with love. See the smiles on all the faces. There. I've got my Christmas list marked up with hugs and kisses. There's one special name, and I sure hope she misses me the same. Hello, my old hometown. I've been away for too long. In fireplaces, all hearts are filling with love. See the smiles on all faces. Thank you. get my round trip ticket. I can't wait to make it home this year.
Welcome to Art of the Song. I'm John Dillon.
And this is Viv Nesbitt from Taos, New Mexico.